Actually, I want to give immediately the word to Claire Pentecost, and keep our questions and discussion for after the two lectures. So, Claire, the floor is yours.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
And now let's see if I can share this. And are you seeing my slide that says my name?
Yes.
Okay, so here we go. Thank you, Seth. That was so prodigious. I got so excited. I'm going to have to listen to it again because after a while I couldn't really understand what you were saying because I was so excited about this whole idea of like looking at the soil profile, the microbiome of the soil, and its changing consistency due to the wastewater. Anyway, we'll get to that afterwards. I'm glad to be here. I really appreciate the invitation, and I have been at the conference the last 2 days and really enjoyed it. I like to start with this quote by John Cage. I'm an artist, so I'm going to talk to you about mostly about art. But Cage, talking about his own work, said in one interview, it wasn't a question of communication or something to be understood, but it was a question of changing our minds about the fact of being alive. And this touches me, this idea that part of what we're doing culturally as artists is to shape and reshape the way we feel about being alive, nothing less. Okay, first, a little exercise. I want you all to imagine a plant, a favorite plant, maybe a tree you know, or a bed of irises or something, and get the picture in your mind. And then let me ask you, how many of you imagined the root system of the plant? Because we so often do not think about what goes on where vision is interrupted by the opacity of soil without a microscope. This is a quick experiment. It wasn't that quick, but where these peas were grown in sand and then sand with compost. And you can see the elaborated root system engendered by the presence of microbial life. Now, I'm an artist. I lived for years in New York, and I did work about our relationship to nature and the institutions that mediate that relationship, like zoos and natural history museums, and even photography itself, and structures of imagination that determine the way we relate to the natural world, what we call nature. And then I moved to the Midwest in the late 90s, and I discovered agriculture, which I think is very interesting that I wasn't really thinking of agriculture as part of nature. Whereas actually, it's probably the most intimate relationship we have is located in the food we eat, we grow, produce, and eat. At first, I was looking at the system, the global food system, which is very much influenced by the American food system. Here is a advertisement in France. The American refrigerator is a deluxe refrigerator. And the whole system of agriculture is something that's been exported aggressively around the world. I took some pictures at a trade fair, an agricultural fair in Argentina, where what I found, what it revealed about our agricultural system is that it's heavily mechanized. We found chemical companies, machines to distribute chemicals, trailer tanks for more chemicals, trucks, of course, tires. it's a very heavily fossil fuel intense system. And then, of course, banks, because it's capital intensive. And most farmers live in a state of debt. And what is being produced? Monocultures, which are exported around the world, find their way into grocery shelves as very unhealthy food, because what do you do with literally tons and tons of an undifferentiated material, a commodity like soy or wheat or corn? You have to add flavoring and fat and salt and sugar and add back vitamins that come out in the processing department. And this leads to the kind of obesity that Seth was just mentioning in regards to Mexico City. Then a lot of it, the majority of these commodities are for feedlots, right? So what you're looking at is an aerial view of a feedlot. These are these little dots in the left-hand corner are cows. And this lurid, fabulous bloom over here is their sewage. So we have concentrated the sewage of animals. And the application of fertilizer, here's on this North American continent, the concentrations of fertilizer in the Mississippi Valley, they're the darker is the more heavily fertilized. And of course, this goes to all down the Mississippi River and makes a dead zone. So what's the alternative? I got really tired of looking at a system that is opaque, secretive, corporate controlled, and frankly depressing. And I started looking at alternative methods of agriculture. And of course, it comes down to soil. So that's how I got interested in soil. That's just a quick tour of how I got here. And specifically, I started out with an interest in compost, which is something everyone can make. Now, what is soil? A mixture of sand, silt, and clay inhabited, right, by all these living microscopic creatures, and of the protists and the mycorrhizal hyphae and bacterial colonies, etc. And you see there is space in here, which is very important for the circulation of oxygen and water. So this is a picture, a diagram of a well-structured soil. Here are some pictures. I started in 2011 to study soil biology because it's the most fascinating dimension of soil to me. Here are pictures from my microscope. This is fungus. And these are bacterial aggregates, these amber clumps. And what I learned, I had always thought soil structure just had to do with the mechanical constitution of your sand, silt, and clay. But what I learned is that the biology actually makes the structure by making these microaggregates of the bacteria sticking to each other to make different size clumps. This is in the middle, we see a microarthropod, and you can see that this is my little GIF, that it's moving because when you look at a soil sample in the microscope, everything moves because it isn't, you haven't killed it yet. And it's very exciting. And here actually is a video that I made of a nematode, a bacterial feeding nematode at work. And you can see this strange focus variability of 400, a magnitude of 400 times. Now, let me find my cursor. And here's a tardigrade, otherwise known as a water bear. This is one soil creature that I find often my audience has actually heard of, because in the electron scanning microscope picture, it's very cute, which I'll show you a reproduction of that soon. A stalked ciliate, some kind of blastula. It's just full of interesting things that sometimes can be identified and sometimes can't. So what I'm talking about here is a soil food web. It's a trophic cascades of basically who eats whom, and recycles waste. These, as we were especially dwelling on in Kuhn's presentation yesterday, these creatures are the great recyclers of decaying matter. So they keep us from being up to our necks in dead things. So for a first work, I decided to make a huge worm composting bed in my basement. And in the bed, I laid a 6 by 9 foot cotton American flag. And the worms composted the flag after 4 or 5 months. And I called it Proposal for a New American Agriculture. Clear, right? And the byproducts, the externalities, of course, were not nitrous sewage going down the Mississippi, but just great soil for my garden. So I wanted to communicate. I got a chance to do a larger project, and I wanted to communicate the value of soil, that soil is actually one of our most precious resources, which we are losing rapidly. In fact, I've read that the biggest export of the U.S. is actually topsoil, but it's not going out in ships, it's going down the rivers into the sea because of the way we practice farming. So I needed a form, and I decided that I would propose soil as the basis for an economy. At one point, we pegged economies to the gold standard. Now, you could say it's effectively a function of the petrodollar, or the price of oil. And I wanted to propose something that we actually, that is actually healthy and beneficial to the earth, healthy soil and its maintenance. I think of soil as a social practice, which we'll get into in a minute. But so I used the form of the ingot, and I made ingots out of a mixture of soil and compost. There's nothing toxic in here, so that I actually sold the piece recently, but if we were tired of looking at it, we could compost it, and it would be perfectly good feedstock for compost. But when I displayed them, I put them on a panel that I gold leafed because I wanted it to be very legible. And you come in, you see the form of the ingot, you see the gold, but the substance has been reversed and the ground is the gold, and it's merely for display. And the valuable element is the soil itself. So here is an installation. I also made designs for currency notes. And of course, as we put people of usually of national importance on our currency notes, I decided to make drawings of people who have contributed to a more ecological understanding of agriculture and to a more ecological understanding, period. So in the left-hand corner, we have Lady Eve Balfour, early advocate of soil health, started the soil, I think it's called the Soil Association in England. Next to her is Sir Albert Howard. And I dipped these drawings in a mixture, in a kind of a slurry of compost and soil and water. And then I manipulated them to get different patterns because I wanted there to be that materiality within, embedded within the object itself. In the lower left-hand corner, we have Laura Kutzema, who was a root specialist in Austria, and then Rachel Carson. Then I started to add people who I thought had just kind of started to reposition the human in the larger, the Earth's biome. So I have Darwin here, and a quote from his last monograph, which was on the earthworm. And he says in the introduction, he says, "For those of you who are not interested in small agencies and their accumulated effects, you will not be interested in my book." And I love this phrase, small agencies and their accumulated effects, which is, of course, a description of evolution, but also perhaps an inspiration for social change, that we can all become a small agency working together for accumulated effects. Next to him is Franz Kafka, who peopled many stories with animals and questioned distinction, the superiority of the human. And this is a quote from a report to an academy, in which a character who is an ape who learns to speak, who effectively becomes human, a participant of human civilization. And he says, Red Peter says, "Everyone who walks this earth feels a tickling at his heels." And I wonder, what is that tickling? Is that death? Is that the life in the soil? Is that the suppressed knowledge that we are of the earth and will return there? Then we have Donna Haraway with her dog Cayenne, "Life is a verb and not all the actors are human." And in the bottom right-hand corner, a personal hero of mine, Lynn Margulis, who championed the endosymbiotic theory of evolution. Then I went further and started to include creatures from the soil food web. So I have a mole here, a bee, the earthworm, and the tardigrade, which I promised you to show you a cuter picture of the water bear based on the electron scanning microscope version of it. And here I put with the earthworm, since that was also related to the Darwins, here is an image that Emma Darwin drew in her book, her date book, obviously drawn for her children. And here is Darwin's famous first sketch of what would become a kind of arboreal theory of evolution. I did another version of this. I made that piece in Germany, and I couldn't import the soil into the US because it's illegal to import soil. So I did another version in Florida, and I spent a day working with farm workers And I made drawings, a new set, including the portraits of farm workers that I spent time with. And of course, they are anonymous because they are of undocumented status. And of course, are some of the most exploited people in any economy is the farm workers. Anyway, this is my first installation of it. And I wanted to show you at the back, I borrowed this curious item from the Museum of Natural History in Kassel. And it's the oldest geological vertical section. It's the Reichelsdorfer Mountain Cabinet. And you can see that in the top of the cabinet, there are stones. This is literal stone in layers in proportion to geological sequence. And what's interesting to me, besides the fact that it's just a really interesting educational object and an early understanding of geology, is that these stones were cut by miners. And the reason that they were seeing this is because they were mining for this dark band at the bottom of the columns, which is the copper ore. So I wanted to use this as a kind of representation of the age of extraction. And next to it, I had a replica made. And in my replica, I put an active worm bed because I was interested in the whole idea that you could make an economy based on something that anyone can make with a little knowledge and organic waste. And you can see this woman has a set of earphones. You can't see the worms because they are photophobic, but we made it possible for you to hear the worms munching and busily working their way through the actually through the bacteria that decomposes the organic matter. And there you can see. And then with a thought of, well, anyone can make compost, but what about real estate? And how can you use your compost to grow food if you don't have access to land? So I worked with these designers, Ben Furton and Randy Coulson, about to make these vertical growing systems. These are cheap, they're simple, the materials are available anywhere in the world. And this is a prototype, and this is 6 weeks of growth of, and this is all vegetable varieties. I also have given soil workshops where people can bring soil samples, and we look at it in the microscope, which is hooked up to a video projector. We had a compost congress of organic farmers from around Austria and Germany. They've all brought samples of their compost and tasted them and felt them and discussed their methods. In the end, they even made a manifesto, which it kind of relates to what Seth was talking about, the farmers' protest in Mexico, because in Germany, they have a composting system. People put out their organic waste for collection, and they have compost factories, but they're using a lot of it as biofuels. And the farmers are protesting that this valuable organic material is being used for fuel instead of fertilizer. Sorry, I already did that. Okay, so I got really interested in microbes and the whole world of microbial life, and especially beneficial microbes. All the while being aware that we live in a microbe phobic world. Here's a Purell ad, and this is well before the pandemic. This entreaty that we could imagine a touchable world, as though the barrier to actually a haptic relationship with the world is the ubiquitous presence of germs, which we will kill with our microbicides. And at the same time, you may be aware of the hygiene hypothesis, which is a growing knowledge of the fact that we are, in fact, inhabited by a huge proportion of microbes. It's about, by weight, about 50-50, the microbes to the, what are the actual human cells, or by the number of cells. But the, there's like 100 times more microbial DNA in our systems than human DNA. So of course, those who cracked the human genome were very disappointed that as such a complex organism, we had so few genes, but they weren't counting the presence of all our symbionts in and on our bodies. And the hygiene hypothesis is that with the squandering of antibiotics and pesticides, insecticides, fungicides, etc., we have killed off so many of the beneficial symbionts that we co-evolved with, that we're seeing, and especially in affluent countries, we're seeing a dramatic rise in disorders of autoimmune systems, because it turns out that microbes, among their many, many functions in our bodies, they teach the human immune system to regulate itself, their presence in the developing child. And as you can see in this Times magazine, Some of My Best Friends Are Germs, an article by Michael Pollan, you see the child covered in dirt, because a lot of the theory is that children are too sequestered from other theaters of microbial life that are part of the education of our immune systems, as well as the regulation of our gastrointestinal systems, etc. And so we're seeing the rise in autoimmune systems and allergies and irritable bowel syndrome. There's a long list. So I started thinking of my community and the community that I am, because we're actually walking ecosystems, or a self-portrait, or a selves portrait, that we have biological evidence now that we are multiple. So I made a piece called Old Friends and Unloved Others. Old Friends is the name that Dr. Graham Rook has given these symbionts with whom we have co-evolved. Unloved Others is a name that Deborah Rose Byrd gave to all the species that are not charismatic enough, that are critical to the ecosystem, but are not charismatic enough to garner protection in our minds. So I made an installation that was like an apothecary, or a pharmacon, And I collected a lot of the paraphernalia of an apothecary. And here's the opening. And in the middle, I did have of a table, I had a worm bed, an active worm bed, because I found people really like to be near worms. Who knew? But they get excited when they come to the gallery. And I had bell jars, which you could lift the top and take in the aroma of distinct soils. And all the soils were labeled. And what I meant to tell you is that all of these jars are filled that would be for proto pharmaceuticals are filled with soil, and they are labeled with the exact location from which the soil was collected. And I'm trying to make a point of continuity between the health of our soils and the health of our bodies. Because if you know that your farmer nurtures the health of the soil, you can count on healthier, much healthier, more nutritious food. I also had a collection of silver point drawings that were featured some of the unloved others, the fungus. Here is a springtail that lives in the soil. This one features a cow and microbes and a baby, because part of the hygiene hypothesis finds that babies who spend time on farms as they are growing have much fewer allergies, and they have shared microbes from beneficial microbes, of course, from other creatures. Here's a drawing of rhizomes and lungs. And here is, I used some quotes from art history. This is the Primavera by Botticelli, but I have populated her mouth instead of flowers with bacteria, fungus, and protists. Da Vinci's Ideal Man. Here I have also put in the company of what we need to live healthy lives. And here is a brain with inflammation, which is one of the symptoms of autoimmune disorders. Now, here's a little story I just wanted to add. When I went to London to do the first iteration of this show, I suddenly got a terrible backache, and I went to a chiropractor who gave me exercises. There I am in the gallery doing my exercises. I went to a medical doctor and was given drugs, and they both said it's the most common thing in the world, and you have a slipped disc pinching the nerve and causing this pain. Well, my week in London installing the show, the pain got so bad, it spread. I was using a cane. I was finally in a wheelchair. And I went to the emergency room 3 times, only to be told the same thing. And finally, I walked into an emergency room where a doctor took a blood sample, and it turned out I had a staph infection in my spine. Now, I tell you this because the irony isn't lost on me that I'm making a show about beneficial microbes, and I am floored by a pathogen. And it was almost, I felt like it's kind of the universe saying to me, don't get romantic about the about your friendly, beneficial microbes and forget. Of course, now none of us can forget because we're in a global pandemic and the confusion is here again. So I did another version of this because I didn't really get to experience the show because I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. I was on IV antibiotics for 13 weeks, three times a day, because staph, it lives on our skin, but if by chance it gets into the bloodstream, you're in trouble. And my immune system was down because I had had radiation therapy for a cancer. I got to do the show again and in Chicago, and I used Chicago soils. And here, since I was in residence where the show was, I had on Fridays, people could come bring their soil samples, and we would look at them in the microscope, which people always find exciting. Now, these figures here are very bad examples of something I've gotten better at, which is a process called soil chromatography. And this was developed by an associate of Rudolf Steiner's, Aaron Fried Pfeiffer. Chromatography, of course, is a common process, laboratory process, whereby a complex substance is passed through a filter and under certain conditions, and the different constituents of the substance travel at different rates through the filter paper. So you get a pattern. Now, I've been doing this with soil samples, and what interests me about it is that, first of all, let me back up. The reason Steiner and Aaron Fried Pfeiffer wanted to develop this was to give farmers an inexpensive method to get literally a picture of their soil, and so that they could track its health as they amended it, as they grew crops. I like these partly because they are, I call them oculi because it's like an eye into a world that is normally opaque to us. And one of the things that interests me about them is that everyone is different. So it's a demonstration of the fact that soil is local, it has a history, and so it's going to make a slightly different pattern. And here are two that are extremely different. One is from a soy field, this gray. All these are bad indicators. And this is from the Ho Forest on the Olympic Peninsula, which is florid with organic matter and looks quite different. So I think that is will suffice for now, and thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Claire, for this fascinating talk. I invite Seth to, yes, other people to put on their cameras again.